Hi, everybody. Welcome to our second episode of the Afropreneur Podcast for the year 2019. We're still all excited about the year, all our plans, all our goals, and our expectations, right? My name is Uwem Wemakwan, and beside me is...
Blessing Abeng. I really want to change this introduction style, but then we'll talk about that in another episode.
Yeah. So what do we have today? It's going to be quite a lengthy episode.
Yeah, so let's make it short by just going straight to the point. We hosted Looney, and we had an interview with him, and it was really, really enlightening. So we're looking forward to you learning about investments, about your business, about improving your business to be investment and investor ready.
So one of the problems that entrepreneurs talk about is cash, unavailability of cash, or not knowing where to look for cash, or even how to spend the cash when they have it.
Yep.
Finance is a very, very core aspect of building a successful business, which is why we have Looney on the podcast today. Looney has a passion for investing in businesses across the world.
Can we
and in
them
Africa,
to find out about Looney from the
especially.
Podcast?
Especially. So the next voice we're going to be hearing is...
Looney.
All right, so everyone calls me Looney. That's spelled L-U-N-I. Depending on which English you speak, that sounds a little crazy or not. I'm from Seattle, Washington, and my job is to help entrepreneurs. I do that in all sorts of ways. The biggest and the most famous of these is called FLEDGE, which is the Conscious Company Accelerator, or Network of Conscious Company Accelerators now.
And why are you interested in entrepreneurs?
Well, I am an entrepreneur. So I started my first company when I was 22 years old. That was back in 1992. I did for 20 years. I was a... For 20 years, I was a tech entrepreneur. I did venture scale tech companies, which means they got funded by venture capitalists. Some famous venture capitalists put money in my companies. And then I made a big swing in life in 2011. My last tech company left town on me. I was free to do anything I wanted, and what I decided to do for the next 20 years of my career, or next 40 years of my career, was to help entrepreneurs. So FLEDGE I count as my sixth company. Now I'm a parallel entrepreneur instead of a serial entrepreneur, and I have helped 81 companies through FLEDGE and, I don't know, 500, 600, 700 companies in total in the last 7 years.
Wow, that's amazing. What's so peculiar about the African entrepreneur in your experience?
Nothing's peculiar about them. There aren't enough really good programs to help African entrepreneurs. I didn't go out. I never had the thought saying, what I need to do is go help entrepreneurs in Africa. The thought I had was I need to help entrepreneurs, period, wherever they happen to be. I didn't know where they were. I can't give you a map of where the hotspots are for entrepreneurs globally. Right. I know everyone knows some of them, but like the distribution is unknown to me. And 2 years into my effort at FLEDGE, so sometime around 2013, I had a bunch of really good applications from Tanzania. So part of what makes success in business is happenstance and luck and serendipity. So serendipity. I had 3 good applications from Tanzania out of 200 and something total applications. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting. I like these 3. Why don't I bring all 3 into the program? And we had 6 companies that session. So 3 Americans and then 3 companies doing business in Tanzania. But one was an expat American team, one was an expat Canadian team, and one was our very first African entrepreneur. And he's awesome. The two expat teams have failed, but the native... The native entrepreneur has grown his business by more than a factor of 10 in those 4 years.
Wow.
So part of it was serendipity that we just happened to come across that and built off of that. And part of it was we happened across an amazing entrepreneur who's unlike most any entrepreneur anywhere in the world. And we just assumed that the other Africans were like him and have subsequently learned otherwise, but nonetheless, they're still great. And that was the last That was the last time we had even half of our companies in the program, in the U.S. at least, not from Africa. And we did. We run our program here in Seattle. We have partners in Lima, Peru. They've had two Africans there, even though they're in Latin America, and there's no flights from Africa to Latin America. We have a partner in Barcelona. They did seven companies, six from Africa, one from India. We have a partner in University of Padua in Italy. They were funded by Europe. They were mandated to bring in European teams. They had eight companies, and yet five were from Europe and three were from Africa. And then we just announced partners in Alexandria, Egypt, to do North Africa, Middle East, and Kigali, Rwanda, to do all the rest of Africa, and a partner that we're doing a land-focused program on in Nairobi for 4 days in December. So it built on itself.
Really lovely. What do you look out for when you're picking your entrepreneurs? What are the key things you look out for?
We talk about it in the simple terms. It's team, impact, and odds of success. Okay. In reality, there's a bunch more criteria that are hiding underneath those three big buckets. So first and foremost, we are in, and just to be clear, our model is that we invest in every company we work with. So in the U.S., we're handing out $20,000 checks to everybody who gets invited to Seattle or New York. In Europe, we're doing 15,000 euros, which is almost the same amount of money. We haven't picked the numbers yet for Alexandria and Kigali. They'll probably be a little smaller because cost of getting there is smaller from those regions. So first and foremost, we are investing in our companies and we need a great team. So we would love to find entrepreneurs who can build companies at a speed of 10 times in 4 years, but you know that's rare. So teams that can grow their company by a factor of 3 or 4 or 5. And then we're impact investors. We are trying to solve hunger, poverty, climate, emissions, unemployment, things that make the world better. So that's important to us. And if given the choice, we'll pick the team with the idea that has the bigger impact. And then third is odds of success. We are only investing in mission-driven for-profit companies. So they have to be a company. They have to, whatever they're doing, whatever goodness they're doing in the world has to be in their product or their service. And so we're looking for companies that can have enough customers to make profits so that they can grow their business so they can have that impact.
That's lovely. What challenges do you face while running this company? Running your friend?
Yeah, our biggest challenge at running our company, which is the accelerator, is funding. So again, we're investing in every one of our companies. We're doing this. We have graduates in 26 different countries around the world, and finding funders that are interested in funding really early companies everywhere. Is hard to find. And then our other challenge is that we help our graduates find funding, and helping find funders that fund these kind of companies all over the place is hard. We have no problem finding entrepreneurs. We are flooded with entrepreneurs. Nonetheless, if you're listening, obviously if you're listening to the podcast, hopefully you are an entrepreneur. We still want you to apply. Just have an expectation that it may take 3 or 4 or 5 applications before we let you in. And we have a lot of graduates now whose story is, I applied and got rejected, but I applied again and got rejected, and then I applied again, and you know what? I got rejected again, and then that fourth time was the magic bullet, and I got in. And I'm so glad I applied 4 times.
Well, persistence is key as an entrepreneur, so I think that's great too.
So let's talk about your accelerator. In terms of training, how does that work? What are the benefits the entrepreneurs get from being in your accelerator?
Okay, so I have a theory, I have a hypothesis, which seems to be true, but I won't call it perfectly true yet. Not enough data. The hypothesis is, in order to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to know how to do a lot of different things at least competently, right? You don't have to be an expert in everything, but you need to know at least how to do some strategy and some marketing and some sales and some finance and operations and a few more things. And the problem is they don't teach you these things in high school. And even if you go off to college, there's no class you can take that teaches you all of these things. You can take individual classes, but usually you have an interest and you follow down that path and you become what I'd call spiky, right? You become really good at marketing, but you don't know anything about sales. Or you become good at finance, but you don't know anything about marketing. And so what we do in the program is we try and fill in the gaps. So our curriculum covers all those topics. If you're in my city and I'm the one pushing you to do this versus my partners, you know, I'm pushing you to spend time working on the stuff that you don't like, that you're not as good at, because you need to know how to do that. So that's one part of our curriculum. And anybody who wants can get a copy of that. It's called The Next Step. It's available on Amazon from wherever you are in the world. You can order a Kindle version. You can come to my website, which is lunarobiscuit.com. The first book is free if you want to read it on the website. I have my own podcast that's also on that same website. Just Google will find it if you type in L-U-N-I. But that's just part of the story. That's not enough. That's step one. Step two is what accelerators do that you can't get anywhere else is they can flood you with mentors. So what you've probably never experienced, because unless you've been in it through an accelerator, there's no place else that does this, is meeting 10 or 15 or even 20 experienced professionals one-on-one, you know, between a half hour and hour each, sometimes meetings with these people multiple times, but getting advice from professionals on whatever your next hurdle is, or your next three hurdles or eight questions, whatever it is you need. You can get it not from a book and not from a lecture, but from another human being. Yeah. And there's some magic that happens when you do this with 10 mentors. And there's a little bit more magic when it's 15. And when you get to about 20, what most everybody does at that point, if in a condensed period of time, right? We do this whole program in 10 weeks. So if we can get you 15 mentors in 5 weeks, which is our goal, then you usually just turn around to us and say, stop. I can't talk to anyone else anymore. I have to I have to digest what they're saying, and I have to, like, do something with my business. And that can only happen in an accelerator. And that's only step two of three. The third step is that we spend 3 out of our 10 weeks teaching people how to tell a story. And this is something else that's usually not taught in school. If you come to the Fledge website, Fledge, F-L-D-E-G-E, you will see 81 talks that look a lot more like TED Talks than investor pitches.
Yeah, sure. I've seen that.
Yeah, so our entrepreneurs get up and they tell a story that makes the audience, you know, lean forward and want to know more, as opposed to, you know, their eyes glaze over and they're tired of looking at stats and words on the page. And that's really hard to teach. And what I've found is, I've been working with entrepreneurs from over 2 dozen countries. No matter what language you're taught in, no matter what school you go to, they teach you how to do an essay. And so when I tell people write a story, almost inevitably the first thing they write is an essay. And essays are really boring stories. That's the most boring version of a story I've ever seen. And so we unteach them that and teach them the art of telling a story like you would sit around a campfire and tell a story.
Wow. That's really, really good. So in your experience and in working with an array of entrepreneurs, what is the singular... I'm trying to phrase the question right. What's the singular most important trait an entrepreneur must have? Or if you have more than one, what are the most important traits an entrepreneur must have?
The best definition I've ever heard of entrepreneur is that it's a person who's relentlessly resourceful. And the breakdown of those two words, relentlessly resourceful, means two things. One, it means that this person makes a list of the resources they need, whether that's money or people or equipment or whatnot. But they think about what they need regardless of what they have. Most people in the world look around and say, okay, this is what I have. What can I do with it? And the great entrepreneurs look around and say, this is what I need. Where can I get it? And then the relentless part comes in going and getting it. However that takes to get it. The path that gets talked about in the press and written about in the books is money, right? The I don't want to say the easy way. The obvious way to get what you need is to go raise money and then spend the money on what you need. Unfortunately, you know, there's a whole lot less money chasing startups than there are entrepreneurs chasing money. And so more often than not, you have to find a way to get what you want without money.
So if you were to give a final advice to all the entrepreneurs out there, what would your advice be?
I got a lot of bits of advice. I used to say, back when I was a techie, I used to say, when you're coming up with your idea for your startup and you're first getting it off the ground, make sure it's big. Because whether you're doing a big idea or a small idea, your odds of success are the same. And if you succeed, you would prefer to succeed with the big idea. But 7 years ago when I moved to the world of impact, I shifted that advice to say, when you're starting your company, think about the one that has the bigger impact in the world. Because you're probably going to fail. Right? My advice has also shifted a bit because I'm older and wiser and whatnot. So I know that you're likely to fail. You don't think that, but you're likely to fail, unfortunately. Which means whatever effort you're doing isn't going to matter unless it succeeds. And if it succeeds, well, you're going to be a whole lot happier if you can point back and say, look, I did something that made an impact across my entire country, as opposed to something small that helped, you know, 100 people or 1,000 people or even 10,000 people. And if you do something that has a huge impact, right, and does affect an entire country or region or the whole globe, the money is a consequence of that, and so the scale and whatnot will come anyway.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing from your
wealth of knowledge.
Your wealth of knowledge.
I gotta tell one more story. Sorry.
Oh, wait, of course.
Force you to listen to one more story. So at the most recent Seattle demo day, we had one African company there. We had a bunch of African companies, but one in particular was called Africa Business Radio. And so I'll plug them right here. So it's a streaming radio station every day online. And we decided to do basically this little mini live episode interview between Soji and I. Soji's the founder. And so it started out with him interviewing me, and then I flipped it around to me interviewing him. And so and we knew what the questions were. We practiced this. And so one of his questions to me was like, well, why Africa? Like, same question you asked me, but I gave a different answer then. So I want to give my other answer, which is, why on earth do I do Africa? It's not how did it come about, but why is Africa such an important place in terms of startups? And that answer is pretty easy. So like from here in 2018 on, why do I continue doing work in Africa? It's no longer happenstance. It's opportunity. And the opportunity, I look at it this way. There's a billion something people in China. In 1985, Deng Xiaoping decided that China, that the path they were on in communism wasn't working. They were going to open up their economy to the capitalistic ways. And in doing that, they took a half a billion people out of poverty. They've turned them into middle class. They're living just like Europeans in terms of standard of living. They made this immense impact in the world. And they did that between 1985 and here we are, 2018. And then in the 90s, the people in India, the government of India, said, well, we're being left behind. We have a billion two Indians at the time, I think. Anyway, more than a billion people. And they said, we got to get rid of some of our socialist ways, we have to adopt more Western methods. And they've been able to pull like 350, 400 million people out of poverty into the, again, European American style middle class since the 90s. And, you know, both of those countries still have a ways to go, but they proved that it's possible to pull a whole bunch of people out of poverty, which, lo and behold, we already knew this. This is how the first billion people got to be middle class or in the world, top 10%. No government gave them foreign aid. They just made it happen themselves, right? It just took a long time. It took 200 years. Well, if you look around the globe, there's only one place left with a billion people who need to get pulled out of poverty, and that is Africa. And it will happen. No matter what we do, it's going to happen. We already have 10-ish percent of the population are middle class. By the time we get 15 years from now, right, maybe 20, but about 15 years from now, we're going to have a half a billion Africans living the middle class lifestyle, right, with cars and air conditioners and refrigerators and everything else that comes with it and other problems that come with it as well. But it's going to happen. And those of us who are investing in the continent now will own small percentages of some really huge companies in 15 years.
So that was Luni's voice you just heard. We hope you learned a lot. If you have any questions, please send questions. Send your questions to
questions@theafropreneur.net
and follow us at The Afropreneur.
On social media, yep. On Twitter and on Instagram and Facebook. Send your questions, send your suggestions, you know, comment on the post,
yeah,
on the website,
download,
share with a friend.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things I tell people that my mentor sometimes is that Africa will not develop without collaboration. So you can't be the only one that has the good stuff, that knows the information. Share with other people, spread the word, help other people grow, because as you grow and they grow, we all grow together.
Bye guys, be awesome. You've got to save, you've got to save it. You've got to save, you've got to save it.